Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes, y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42,
puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Hey everyone, so you're wondering where my friend Mike Lindell is? Well, guess what? He was actually creating the My Slipper. It's like walking on clouds, right? Don't forget to use the promo code Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R, and you will receive 40% off of your My Slippers. Your whole family is going to love it. I'm back from the border, back from the Texas and Arizona border, and as well as Tennessee, folks. I covered the story for Sean Hannity on the issue with the Tennessee farmers and the COVID relief package, but I'm here today to talk to you about the border. It's a big, big story as well, and I have a very special guest. I know you all are going to love him. He is the Arizona Attorney General, Mark Brnovich. Mark Brnovich, and he is going to be with us today. And I'm telling you, you're not going to want to miss this interview. He has a lawsuit right now, along with the Montana Attorney General. I know you guys saw what was happening in Texas as well, but it's challenging the Biden administration's executive orders at the border and what they're doing there. And their recent policy to stop deportations and go against the law. There are very few people that are willing to do this, to stand up to the government in such a way. And the attorney general is willing to stand up to the executive office and say, hey, President Biden, look at what you're doing. It's a huge, huge problem. And that's why we brought him on the show today. So he's going to be able to give you all the details, not only about the lawsuit, but what he's seeing on the border and what's going on and whether or not he will actually run for governor of Arizona. You have to listen to the interview, though, to find out. Folks, I know I talk about this all the time, right? I talk about AMAC because I believe in AMAC. I believe in the organization, an organization that supports freedom, supports fighting for what we believe in. You don't want to give your money to liberal AARP, do you? So go to amac.us/Carter. Go to amac.us/Carter. You will not regret it. It is an awesome organization. And thank you so much, AMAC, for sponsoring our show. So let's start out. Let's start out with something that I believe is very, very important. And that is the American farmer. That is the American farmer. I do not want to forget how important they are and the role that they play in our country, just historically and even right now. And I was in Tennessee, and I got to spend time with Kelly and Matt Griggs. They are incredible. They are an incredible couple, and they have this wonderful son, Carter. I'm going to bring her on the show in the future. And they were willing to talk about something that most farmers are frankly not talking about right now. They are fighting this COVID relief bill. It is just absolutely insane what's going on right now. And they describe it. Well, here, let me play the clip for you first, and then I'll explain a little bit about what this COVID relief bill is doing and how it's dividing the farming community.
Sorry, but I was raised to not see color and not see race, but to see the character and the person's heart. That's how I was raised. That's how the farming community sees each other, is a character. And if you go into a bank, if you go into any place that loans you money, they're not going to look at who you are by color or race. They're going to look at your numbers on a piece of paper. And if you don't meet that criteria and you don't meet that rule, you don't get that money.
Yeah, I've been hopping around the country on all of these stories. I was in Texas covering the border, then Arizona, and then I went to Tennessee to cover this because this story is so important. It's so important. So, you know, the government has the $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package. And within that package is called the American Rescue Plan. It is about $10.4 billion, give or take. Out of that $10.4 billion, 50% of that is going to minority farmers. It includes billions of dollars. Think about that. Over $5 billion of debt relief and other assistance for farmers of color. But I want you to hear what's happening here. We've had, I think we have roughly 2 million farms is what I learned when I was in Tennessee in the United States. Of those, 980 something thousand of those farms are family owned farms. Probably a little bit more than that. They say around 85%. So that's family owned and independent farms that were struck so hard by the COVID virus, right? Because I want you to think about that. It's not so much the row farming. I learned so much about the farming industry and how much our American farmers put into it, their livelihoods, getting up early in the morning. I was thinking about it when I was on the Griggs family farm. So this is Kelly and Matt Griggs. I was in Tennessee with them. And Matt's family has been farming on the land that we were at in Humboldt, Tennessee for five generations. The late 1800s, his family started farming there, and they're sharecroppers. We talked about that, being sharecroppers. Now, on my dad's side of the family, I've talked a lot about my mom. My mom's from Cuba. I said my father is, you know, a Marine. But on my dad's side of the family, they were prior to the Great Depression, they were sharecroppers. They were cotton pickers. They were actually cotton pickers from Georgia. And my grandfather was able to save money actually during the Depression think about this, picking cotton. You know what it does to your hands and the history behind that and just the hard work being out there on the farm, you know, for hours of the day, you know, in the heat of the day, in the humidity, picking cotton. And, you know, and the horror stories, of course, of our past horror stories of slavery and everything else. But there were a lot of American sharecroppers and farmers, people that were very poor, that's what they did for a living. And I'm out here on the farm, you know, in Tennessee, looking at all of these amazing crops. You know, he showed me pictures of when the cotton actually blooms on his land. It wasn't at that point in time. And he grows soy. And he was talking about, you know, there's 2 million farms in the United States, right? And that number was from 2019, just over 2 million. And that was actually down from 2.2 million in 2007. So there's not as many farmers as you would think, right? And these farmlands, I mean, it's kind of a gamble. He says, you know, it depends on the weather. It depends on the crop. You're praying that, you know, you don't have some type of infestation. So the loans and the money that the farmers need to keep us fed, to keep our country growing and moving forward, is so important to the farmer because they do rely on the government for loans and other things. They pay it back, but they rely on the government for that. And now we have this $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package, right? And of that $10.4 billion or so, of that, half of that is just going to minority farmers. And Kelly and Matt Griggs are saying, look, we don't see color. We've never filled out an application at the bank that said, you know, what's your race? What's your color? This is about getting a loan when you need a loan and paying it back. They said, look, we don't need it because we're row farmers. We weren't hit hard. You know, she joked around about her cotton going to granny panties. I'm going to bring her on because she's so funny. She said, look, my cotton goes to make underwear. So we did not run out. You know, we didn't need to borrow any money on that. And, you know, they grow soy and other things. And, you know, and she was saying, but there's so many farmers out there that during COVID-19, right, really needed the assistance and really need the assistance because they lost their poultry. They lost their pork, right? They had animal products. What happened when the restaurants shut down? They, you know, it's a process. It's not like they're going to stop production. So they really had to euthanize. Can you imagine that? They had to euthanize their meat. They had produce that was rotting. And now they say what the Biden administration has done, even if it was with good intentions, even if it was with good intentions, is dividing the farming community. It's like pitting people against each other. This relief package, you know, will basically say it will pay up to 120% of Black, Hispanic, Asian, or Native American farmers' outstanding debt as of January 1st. So it's already about race. It's already about color. Because it won't do the same for a Caucasian farmer or a white farmer, whatever you want to say. It's not going to do the same for them. But they're suffering. But a lot of people are afraid to speak up because they're like, I don't want to get involved. I don't want to say something. I don't want someone to think that I'm not, you know, sensitive to this or sensitive to the farmer. No, farmers are saying, Matt and Kelly are saying, look, we want who we want. We're a family. We want to help each other out. We don't care what color you are. If you get a loan, you're going to pay it back. But you can't say this group of people, because of the color of their skin, don't have to pay it back. It would be just as bad if they said, you know, we didn't have to pay anything back. You know, Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham came out and said, you know, I believe this is sneaking reparations into the COVID-19 package. And unfortunately, you know, that's the way people are seeing it. What I hope for is that we use our common sense, right? Use our common sense. Take a step back. Take a step back and realize that we don't need to divide this country any more than it's already divided. And it's provisions like this that create those divisions and make people uncomfortable. I mean, farmers are helping each other up, helping each other get out of the tragedy that they suffered, the crisis during COVID-19. I can tell you, I'm going to bring her on so she can tell you all these amazing, wonderful American stories, right, about helping each other out. And before I move on, the most important point, I believe, and something that she said that, I mean, it just, I know it's going to make sense to all of you, is like, why are lawmakers making all of these decisions without ever asking the farmer? Ask the farmer what they need. Ask the landowners what they need. Ask the people what they need, and they will tell you what they need. These are good people. They don't want to take advantage of the system. And they want to be able to share their stories with the American people so that you understand what it is they've been through. We've seen what it's done to our restaurant industry. We've seen what it's done to our grocery store industry. We've seen what COVID has done to our farmers across America. Let's listen to them. For all you lawmakers out there listening to the Sarah Carter Show, you really reach out to these farmers and find out what they need. And, I hope we can get past all of these divisions that are just being instigated by the government. Now, I want to move on because a big story, too, as well, and something that, you know, I've got the Attorney General, the Arizona Attorney General is coming on, Mark Brnovich, and he is going to be talking about the border crisis. And a story just broke, and I remember when I was breaking these over 10 years ago, but a story just broke on Axios, and it's very significant. It says a U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency confirmed to Congress today that four people who were arrested at the southern border since October 1st match names on the FBI's terrorist screening database. Think about that. This is what I talk about all the time. We don't know who's coming in. We don't know who's coming in. When I was in Arizona with Art Del Cueto, we were in Tucson, and we went to that area of the border, you know, for Sean Hannity's show, where it was basically wide open. They never finished the fence. They never finished it. That wall was, there was no wall there. It was like, it was Smuggler's Canyon. That's where it was. Smuggler's Canyon. And there was actually, and that's my little dog. She's protecting me, just so you all know. She's always with me. This is the first time she decided to bark. But that area of Smuggler's Canyon, people get away all the time. So those are the people that they caught, right? What about the people they didn't catch? What about the people they don't ever catch? And even when they apprehend folks, I want you to understand that unless that person has been arrested before, unless that person is in an Interpol database, unless that person is somebody that our intelligence community or FBI has arrested in the past or has information on, that person could be just released into the United States. it doesn't mean you're going to have information on them. That's pretty frightening. And I've talked about the humanitarian crisis. I've talked about what's happened at that border, especially with the young children. But think about the national security implications. Think about what we're all going through right now. We're supposed to be like okay with this. We're supposed to be okay with once again, an administration. And this is not just endemic to the Democrats. I saw the same kind of behavior under the Bush administration. I've said this before. I did not see that under the Trump administration. And I'm not saying that everything that the Trump administration did on the border was perfect. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying for the first time, we had a president that actually wanted to follow the rule of law. There is a rule of law. We do have laws on the books that other presidents did not want to follow. And the big question is, why don't they want to follow it? Why don't they want to follow the rules? Why do they want the borders to be open? Why do they continue to use people like some kind of political game, right? We are human beings. We are individuals. We are not a game. Do not play games with my life, with my child's life, and with the lives of all those children that are crossing the border and some who never make it because they're killed, because they fall off La Bestia, because they die in the desert of thirst. Do not play games with people's lives because we are going to call you out on it. Look, I want you to hear this. This is so important. I want you to hear. This is Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary. I like saying her name because I actually do really like sake at Japanese restaurants. I think it's a great drink. I know. My husband thinks it's like gasoline. He hates it. But Jen Psaki, she says FEMA's arrival at the border doesn't mean it's a disaster. What? FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, is made for disasters. But they're so afraid of saying that their policy is so screwed up and wrong that they have put everybody's life in danger that they want to call it a challenge, right? Would you want to be a part of that challenge? I was down there. Do you want to go down there and see that challenge? That is a crisis, folks. It is a crisis, and it is the reason why FEMA is down there. Listen to this.
On immigration, does FEMA's arrival at the border mean that the administration feels what is happening down at the border is a disaster?
I know that we always get into the fun of labels around here, but I would say our focus labels is on solutions. And this is one of the steps that the president felt would help not become a final solution, but help expedite processing, help ensure that people who are coming across the border have access to health and medical care. Clearly, the numbers are enormous. This is a big challenge, and it certainly is a reflection of using every lever of the federal government to help address that.
Man, she is such a wordsmith. She just kind of tosses things. I'll circle back. I'll get back to you on that. It's just, you know, we don't want to put labels on everything. Yeah, you do. You put labels and lied about the former president day in and day out. That's all the Democrats did. And now they're gaslighting you again. Like they gaslighted everyone in America with the failure of upholding. But by the way, I don't even want to say the failure. I want to say they trampled our Constitution. They trampled our Constitution. They being Joe Biden, President Obama, and everyone that worked underneath him, including Jen Psaki, including Susan Rice, including the FBI and James Comey and Clapper and the whole gang. I mean, these people, they don't even care. They lie and they tell you things. It's like drinking the best wine in the world. It goes down so easy for them. And they expect you to believe it. They expect you to listen to their lies and believe their lies. Oh, do you guys see my little cat? If you're on YouTube, you will see. Well, he's not little. He's big. Barry is hanging out by the door. So I've got like Animal Farm happening here. On my podcast. I've got Barry at the door, probably begging for food. And I've got my dog here protecting me. But before I go too much further down this road, I want to play one more clip. And this is It's so important. It's Congressman Kevin McCarthy. He is the House Minority Leader. I want you to hear what he has to say. He went down to the border. You know, he was on the Sarah Carter Show recently, and I agree with him 100% on this. Listen to this.
You know, it's worse than a crisis. I thought I would see a crisis, but this is really a human heartbreak. We have a brand new facility to care for these children. They built it beyond capacity, thinking they would never reach it. Today, they just set the anniversary that they broke capacity, more than 1,040 children, and it's only growing every day. And what that means is 120 of these border agents that are doing an extraordinary job in unbelievable times can't be on the border protecting us.
He's right. And that's so frustrating for Border Patrol agents that are out there. They know that their first job is to protect the national security of the United States. They are the first line of defense on the U.S. border with Mexico and on the U.S. border with Canada. We've had issues as well going all the way back, you know, before September 11th, you know, on the Canadian, on the northern border. We don't even pay attention to that anymore because we are overwhelmed with a crisis at our southern border. McCarthy is right. This is not an over-exaggeration. The human toll on these children, the human toll on our nation. And before I get to the Attorney General, I'm going to just say one thing. Just say one thing. When there is another situation in the United States, another attack, we saw what Axios just reported, you know, that there were four people, allegedly their names are on the terror watch list, that tried to come in through the border. That's going to be the only way that these terrorists can get in now because of the high levels of security at the airports, right? But when there is an actual attack in the United States, when something really horrific happens, because it's always a matter of, you know, not if, but when, right? Not if, but when. That's what I hear from intelligence officials all the time. That's what they're trying to mitigate. That's what they're trying to prevent. What's the government going to say? What are people in the government going to say when they have to, you know, have a 9/11, another 9/11 commission? Are they going to say, oh, we had no idea. We had no idea at all that, you know, terrorists could traverse our border. Or we had no idea at all that a WMD, a weapon of mass destruction, could come across the border. What are they going to say when Americans die? Are they going to come up with excuses? Or should we just hold them accountable? Because they already know that this can happen. And I don't even know if we can hold anybody accountable. I think they believe they can just get away with it. I believe that they think they can just get away with it. And they want to use plausible deniability. That's what they want to use, plausible deniability. And they think that, you know, no one's going to pay attention. Well, I'm sure going to pay attention. And you know who else is going to pay attention? Attorney General of Arizona, Mark Brnovich. Mark Brnovich currently serves as Arizona's 26th Attorney General. He is not afraid to take on the Biden administration or anyone else for that matter who he believes is violating the law. He spent most of his professional life serving as a prosecutor at the local, state, and federal levels. He understands this problem well. He understands the problems of drug addiction in our country, gang violence. And now in his great state of Arizona, he's seeing an overwhelming increase, like we've seen over the past few months, of undocumented migrants, illegal aliens trying to get into the country. And frankly, they're getting in.
Fluffy bread, fresh tortillas, classic burger buns, and so many carbs. Carb fear is real. But Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and seriously, great taste. Made from a new recipe using heart-healthy olive oil and resistant wheat starch that acts as a prebiotic fiber to promote gut health, Hero Bread products have more of the dietary fiber and protein you want without the net carbs and sugar you don't. There's something for every craving. Sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas, plus monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites with no compromise. Like the 2 gram net carb Hero croissant or the 1 gram net carb Hero cheddar biscuit. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout. That's HEROPOD at HERO.co.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Thank you so much. This is Attorney General Mark Brnovich. I want to thank you for being on the show. I just returned from 2 weeks at the border. I was both in Texas and in your great state of Arizona. Incredible hospitality, incredible people. And I saw with my own eyes once again the tragedy of policies that perpetuate criminal behavior. This is what I say because I've been covering this for about 20 years now, believe it or not. And I was able to meet some young folks that crossed the border, some coming from Honduras. I saw people from Cuba. I saw a gentleman from India, actually. He claimed to be from India, crossed the border from Algodones into Arizona. I know you have a lawsuit right now. So the lawsuit is focused on this. I want you to talk a little bit about the Biden policy and the reason why you decided to expand your lawsuit from February 3rd against the recent immigration policy from the Department of Homeland Security.
So thank you, Sarah, first for having me on. And there's actually two lawsuits going on. And let me just kind of begin by starting off with, you know, a basic lesson in, you know, public policy, economics, whatever you want to call it. Doesn't matter where you're at in the world, what time period in the world, when you decriminalize something and you incentivize something, you will see more of that activity. And so what happened was the Biden administration started issuing executive orders. And there's, you know, the lawsuits, or we're part of a lawsuit over his job-killing carbon rules, but we also initiated two lawsuits related to immigration. First and foremost, he had a policy that basically or essentially stopped deportations. And so as a result of that pause, you literally have people in this country that are supposed to be deported that are still here. So there are approximately 1.2 million people that right now in this country have deportation orders that are supposed to be deported out of the United States and are not being deported because of the Biden administration.
Correct. So I want to just touch right on that because I spoke to a number of people on background, of course, because they didn't want to go on the record with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, as well as, you know, DHS officials that are very concerned with the fact that some of the people that they've released that should be deported, people that have been released from prison, some of them predators, you know, child predators, others involved in drug trafficking, were not deported, actually, and were kicked out into our communities again. Is that a big concern for you? Is that a reason why you did this?
Yeah, absolutely. Because here's the problem. These are people that are not supposed to be here. And then you throw on top of it people that have literally been convicted of crimes or accused of major felonies that are just being released into our communities. In fact, I'll give you a quick example. Just earlier this month, there was a hearing in a federal district court in Texas where the district judge asked the Biden Department of Justice, he literally said, as a federal judge, we are concerned because people that have literally been convicted of felonies that are set for deportation, some of them want to be deported, and literally ICE is just releasing them, saying they essentially don't care. The Department of Justice, Biden's Department of Justice's response was, we don't know. We have no idea what's going on. And that should be troubling to anyone. So you have this faceted problem that's going on. The first part of it, as I said, is this, I call it decriminalization, but essentially is there's no punishment for breaking our laws. Literally, if you are said to be deported, you are not being deported. And so that has a ripple effect because it essentially sends a message to people that, oh, it's okay to break the law and cross the border and try to enter this country illegally. And the second part about it that's problematic is that when you have people that have been convicted of felonies, accused of felonies, people being released without being tested for COVID-19, that has a devastating impact on our communities, you know, our public safety, our social network, our social fiber. So it is a huge problem. And then what happens is that it has this ripple effect of right. More people come in, there's not enough capacity. And then if they're saying, oh, well, we have to release more people. So more and more people, you end up in this cycle where more and more people are trying to come in and more people are being released. And the second lawsuit we have is what I call what the Biden administration is doing to essentially incentivize people to break the law and come here. And that's by basically not defending at the U.S. Supreme Court a case that involves the public charge rule, which basically, essentially, it's a law that's been on the book for 100 years. President Trump created, restrictions on who can get a green card, who can get citizenship based on their ability to support themselves or their sponsor's ability to support themselves. I call it a common sense measure, and the Biden administration, even though they won at one of the appellate courts, has abandoned that appeal. So we're trying to step in and we're saying this rule is constitutional and that the Biden administration should be defending it in the Supreme Court. And if they're not going to defend it, then I will defend it at the Supreme Court, just as I recently did with Arizona's election laws in Brnovich v. DNC.
I think that's just absolutely incredible that you're taking on this challenge because it's so important. It's something that I think for all of our listeners out there, you have to understand there are very few people in this country like the Attorney General from Arizona that's willing to take on the system that is really working against the people of this country. And I'm going to explain why. What would the legal recourse be, Attorney General, for a family? Let's say one of these child predators that's been released, or let's say somebody who has a number of DUIs that should have been returned, or a criminal who's trafficking narcotics kills an American citizen or something. Will there be legal recourse that the family can take against the government for just going against the law to deport them if they knew they had deportation orders? I mean, I've always, I've wondered this, can someone take some kind of legal recourse and against these criminals?
And that's part of the problem is because, the government, especially the federal government, has a certain amount of sovereign immunity. It is very, very difficult to sue the federal government. And so that's why us as state AGs have to be there to stop or try to get the federal government to do what they're legally required to do. Going back to the deportations, but Title 8 of the federal code clearly says within 90 days of the order, you are supposed to deport someone. So it's not just us saying that, oh, we think this is a good policy. It's like, no, literally the federal law requires this. And the Biden administration has said, we can do whatever we want to do. And that's problematic because I will tell you what, look, I'm a first generation American. My family fled communism. And the reason why so many of our relatives or parents, grandparents came to the United States is because the United States is about the rule of law. We don't have a common culture. We don't have a common religion. We don't have a common ethnic identity. What binds us together is the Constitution and respect for the rule of law. And so when you have a president literally saying, well, I'm not going to force immigration laws, or I'm going to go ahead and not defend, previous administrations' rules and regulations that are part of the federal code. I mean, you have essentially a president now with President Biden literally picking and choosing which laws he's going to apply, when he's going to apply them. And the border crisis shows what happens. You end up with chaos, and it's not fair to anyone.
I agree with you. And I think also we could say Susan Rice is maybe the one behind a lot of those picking and choosing of what they're going to defend. And that's just my opinion. The Attorney General is not saying that. But I agree with you. Look, my family, I'm a first generation on my mother's side. My mother was from Cuba. She fled communism in the 1960s. Her entire being was about America. She would tell me every single day, and I've said this on the show before, that my mother would say, if someone would ask her, oh, where are you from? She would say, well, I'm an American, and they said, no, your nationality. She said, well, my nationality is Cuban, but I'm an American. She always saw herself as an American just for that reason, because of justice, right? Because of that balance, those balance of scales, right? That we consider justice in the United States. And a sense that there is, even if there's a little corruption, there's not an overabundance of corruption like we saw in Cuba or like I've seen in Afghanistan or in other countries around the world. It's the reason why people want to come here. But now we've seen something drastically different.
Yeah, and look, not to get too far afield from our lawsuits, but these are important points to make because philosophically, the United States is about an idea. It's about a principle. And so, you mentioned your family's from Cuba, and I always say that when your family has lived history, not just studied it, you have an appreciation for how great this country is because, freedom, liberty, it's not something that we pass on to our kids in our blood. It's something that must be fought for every generation. Younger generations need to understand this. And I think part of the problem we have in this country today is you see people tearing down institutions like our religious institutions. They're tearing down our education system, and whether that's K through 12 or, you know, I've sued our university several times now. And so there's a problem when these institutions are undermining our democratic Republican form of government. And I say Republican, not Republican versus Democrat, but Republican and representative democracy. And so think about this for just a second. If I moved to Poland tomorrow, I could live there the rest of my life and they'd always be, oh, he's the American that died in Poland. I could go to Japan, take a job, live there. They never consider me Japanese. This is the only country in the world where it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, how you spell your last name, you can become an American because we're based on these ideas and principles. And that's why it's so important for us to enforce the existing laws where you don't have a president that basically is unilaterally rewriting the laws. And that's what he's doing. And that's why we see this chaos on the border. And, you know, I know you were just down here, but I was just telling someone this today. In February, just February this year, there was 100,000 apprehensions on our southern border. Now, to put that in perspective, that's about 5 basketball arenas. You know, most, you know, if people follow sports. So that we're talking a massive amount of numbers of people that are coming into this country. And as a result of the public charge rule, you know, we have no idea if they're going to be able to support themselves. They're entitled to benefits. And, you know, most of, you know, our forefathers, our relatives, parents, grandparents, they wanted to be self-sufficient. They came here for that reason. And so we shouldn't create incentives for people to get free healthcare, free education, you know, unemployment benefits when this country is suffering right now. We're a very gracious nation, but we need to take care of the people right now that have been devastated by the impacts of COVID instead of opening the doors and giving a bunch of government benefits to people that are literally rushing across the border right now as we speak.
I agree with you, Attorney General. I also want to talk to you a little bit about that number. You talked about 100,000 that came in February, and I want everyone to understand this. I love the way you described it. I love the way you put it into context, you know, but think about all the people that got away. Arizona, even when I talked to Border Patrol agents out there and even Art Del Cueto, who, you know, was so gracious giving me a tour, he said, you know, what people don't understand is that those are the people we've apprehended. Those aren't the people that got away. Groups of 100 or more that have run across the border. We don't even know who they are. We don't know where they're from. There's a national security implication there. And there's also, I want everyone to understand the humanitarian aspect of this. And I'm sure, Attorney General, you've had to deal with this. These are young children that are being lied to by the drug cartels and the human traffickers. They are being told that they are going to be able to come to America. Maybe, you know, the Biden administration, the way they have set things up, and I know they understand this. I know people in the Biden administration get that the message that they are sending is the same message that Obama sent in 2014. I covered that when we just had a flood of unaccompanied minors into this country. Those children die on this journey. Some of those children are raped. Some of those children are exposed to the worst of humanity. And then they come here and they're alone and they're searching for something or someone. And how do we perpetuate that kind of horrific behavior? How do we not address these issues? There is no way, in my opinion, Attorney General, that the government, that the Biden administration or anyone in it can say that they truly care about these kids. I've talked to them. I know. I speak Spanish. I'm with them. I hear their stories. I could truly care about these children if they understood what they were going through just because of the messaging that this administration has put forward.
And that's the part that really truly breaks your heart, because I think that they are being exploited in some ways by the Biden administration for political purposes. And I think that, and I don't want to, you know, surmise what's going through the head of Joe Biden or anyone else. I'd hate to be living there too long, but I think I'm guessing what's going on is that they've made some sort of political calculation that somehow this benefits them politically. And that's what's so sad to me, because literally, as you said, Sarah, it's a humanitarian crisis. There are people being exploited, and let's not kid ourselves. Everyone listening to this podcast, every single person that crosses the border, they may have the greatest of intentions in the world. They've got to pay the cartels. The drug trafficking organizations make money on every single person when they cross the border. Nothing crosses that border without the cartels' control. So And that means that you're enriching them by encouraging this immigration. Additionally, those people are being exploited. They're going to have to pay those back. We've heard horrible stories about people, how they've had to, they've been assaulted, essentially put into slavery, basically having to sell themselves to the cartels to pay back that debt for getting across the border. And then, of course, there's literally stories, as you know, the Border Patrol will tell you that you'll have a rush of folks in one sector. You know, you mentioned 100 people, 120 people trying to get across. All the Border Patrol agents have to go there, to apprehend them, to stop them. And then literally the drug cartels are trucking drugs across the border. So I know there's some people listening to this may think, oh, you know, what does it matter? I don't live in Arizona or Texas or whatever. I don't live across the border. But the reality is this has an effect on everyone, because one, they're releasing people and they're not staying in Arizona. They're going all over the country. Mm-hmm. And additionally, these cartels that are making money off of this are also bringing in drugs. So when we talk about the fentanyl problem, we talk about heroin problem, I mean, they're poisoning our neighborhoods. And so I don't know how anyone with a clear conscience can let this happen. And then when you go down there, as you said, when you see these people that are clearly being exploited, I mean, it breaks your heart. It's like, this isn't the third world. This is the United States of America. My goodness. Like, you can't have this. It's literally anarchy and chaos. And it's not fair to anyone. It's not fair to the people that have been given a false hope that they're going to, you know, become, you know, immigrants or citizens here in the United States. And it's not fair to the taxpayers. They're going to have to subsidize and pay for this, and then ultimately deal with the costs associated with the cartels using this as an opportunity to increase drug smuggling and, you know, exploiting the migrants.
Well, you brought up a very good point, and that's the poisoning of our communities and the poisoning of our children and the destruction of their own children, the children that are crossing that border. You know, I covered this with my foundation, The Dark Wire. It's an investigation foundation. A few years ago, we did a documentary called Not in Vain. That's V-E-I-N, because of the increase, exponential increase of people that were overdosing, children that were overdosing across the country, not only from exposure to fentanyl, but from heroin addiction. And a lot of people thought, oh, this is just happening in lower income neighborhoods, depreciated neighborhoods. No, it's across the board. It's middle class families, wealthy families, poor families. Doesn't matter what color skin you have. It doesn't matter if you're the cheerleader on a Texas high school team or, you know, a kid living in the poorest part of Chicago. And I saw that in Dayton, Ohio, where the coroner's office literally had to hire a freezer. They had to bring in trucks, freezer trucks, to keep the bodies in there because they could not keep them inside the coroner's office. It was overflowing. So I want people to understand that what the attorney general is saying here and what people are saying here, for those of you who don't live at the border, is very real. It's very real. It's not alarmist. It's not an over-exaggeration. I have been there. I have had people work with me that have never been to the border. They get down there, some security guys that were with me last time with Fox News, and they said it was such an eye-opener for them because they didn't realize how bad it was when they saw kids 4 years old, 3 years old, 13-year-old girl, 15-year-old boys, all traveling alone, you know, dirty, tired, hungry, coming into our country. It doesn't look like America anymore. You're right. It resembled something quite different, like chaos in a war zone. But you knew that these kids weren't coming. They're coming from a different kind of war zone, right? And they're being exploited politically like ping pong balls going across the table back and forth. And it's so unfortunate. Now they're being housed. Are you hearing anything about the housing situation, the housing crisis? Is there where we're keeping these young children and the rest of these what they call family units coming into Arizona and Texas?
And obviously, this is part of, you know, the problem is you have these non-governmental organizations that have already been overwhelmed a little bit with COVID. And there just isn't like the capacity to deal with this right now. So, you know, you hear stuff about opening up like civic centers. I think in Texas, they're talking about opening up, you know, one of the convention centers. And so they're talking about coming up with alternatives. And also DEMA is working on, you know, some temporary structures, apparently. But here's the reality, sir. This is part of the problem. Is Homeland Security or, you know, ICE, they're really not communicating very well with us. And this is, I think, part of the frustration sometimes the local communities have, where, you know, people are being released and, you know, dropped off at bus stations and what's going to happen or not happen to them. There's not a lot of coordination. I know for a fact there's members of the judiciary when this first started happening were very frustrated because people were being released without coordination with the probation departments. Now, I think the Biden administration is probably trying to adjust to that, and they're trying to come up with answers. And you know, we know the issue with FEMA and temporary housing. But once again, this goes back to it's important, I think, to emphasize that this is what you would call an unforced error. This is something that did not have to happen right now.
Right.
And so anybody listening should be asking yourself, why is the Biden administration doing this?
That's the biggest question. Why are they doing this? I want you to respond to this, because this is Homeland Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas talking about the non-crisis at the border. He says,
thank you, Mr. Secretary. Do you believe that right now there's a crisis at the border?
I think that the answer is no. I think there is a challenge at the border that we are managing, and we have our resources dedicated to managing it.
What's your response to that?
Well, I guess it depends on what your definition of crisis is. Hundreds of thousands of people being detained at your border, tens of thousands of unaccompanied minors being detained in facilities in the United States, people being released in our communities without being tested for COVID-19, people being eligible for health care and other government benefits because the Biden administration refuses to defend existing law. I guess it's head scratching, because if this doesn't constitute a crisis, I don't know what is. And I think part of it is that, you know, what's the first step to recovery is acknowledging you have a problem. I mean, the fact that the Biden administration won't even recognize that this is a major catastrophe. And as you said earlier, Sarah, it's the people are being exploited, the people that are coming over, the migrants are being exploited, they're being taken advantage, but it's also having this detrimental impact on all of our communities. And so the fact that the Biden administration refuses to recognize that this is a disaster, I think shows that this is purely some sort of weird political operation for them. And I think that we're all in the petri dish, and it's unfortunate, because that's not what the federal government should be doing.
That's absolutely right. And that's the reason for your lawsuit, right? I mean, this is the reason why you're challenging the government in these lawsuits. And the reason why I brought up earlier, what is the recourse for an American citizen in a case like this when the government fails to follow the law? And I know there is very little recourse, but I don't think people out there really understand that if it wasn't for the Attorney General, if it wasn't for the Attorney General going out there and challenging the government, what we saw in Texas with the Attorney General there, what we're seeing in Montana as well, with your colleagues challenging the government, we would really have no real recourse. I mean, it would be like these executive orders would just be coming off the shelves and nobody would be challenging it, right?
Yeah, and yes, you're right. And you know, sometimes I feel like I'm maybe people are too young to remember Star Wars, or you know, the original Star Wars, right? And sometimes I feel like Luke Skywalker. I'm going into the Death Star, and because you know, you get all these like hits from, you know, the,
oh my gosh, I think you should run for president. I love it.
I was born in the United States, just so we're clear. I was born here, but but it's like being in the Death Star, where you get you get all this like the, you know, the globalist and the mainstream media coming at you, you know, editorial writers, you know, people will send you nasty notes and stuff, and it's, you know, my goodness, I'm just trying to enforce the law as it is. And so I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to talk to people a little bit about the stuff we're doing. I think it's good work. I think we're, you know, consistent in upholding the rule of law. And so, you know, hopefully folks appreciate what we're doing, because a lot of times you hear from the naysayers, you know, you get the Empire firing their phasers blasters. I don't want to get the big
The Death Star.
Yes, I don't want to get the Star Trek people mad at me. Yes, I understand the difference between phasers and blasters. Just so we're absolutely clear for all these sci-fi people out there.
I'm one of them. I love it. Yeah.
Anyway.
I think fun. Well, I do have one question for you, because a lot of people, I've been hearing a lot of rumors, lots of rumors out there. I don't know if you're going to answer it, but I'm hearing a lot of rumors that you're thinking about running for governor for Arizona.
Look, I've got a full-time job right now. I think you know this. our plate is full. That is, once again, nice of you to say, but I think you just gave me a demotion. You said president, now it's
well, you know, I'm very, I have to tell you, Star Wars fans, I'm one of them. So I just, that's why I was, I'm not giving you a demotion. I think there's a stepping stone.
May the force be with everyone that's listening to this right now. Sarah, there's a lot on our plate right now. All of my energy is dedicated right now to try to protect Arizona. And as I mentioned right at the beginning, I'm involved in that carbon lawsuit against the carbon rules, which are going to have a devastating impact.
Yeah, fill us in a little bit on that before I let you go, because I think that's important. I think you really wanted to touch on that.
And I'm sorry. Look, this immigration, this crisis is terrible. It's right here. It's going to have a devastating, obviously, as I keep saying, impact on us. It is important. But there's other things the Biden administration is doing, like these new carbon rules, where basically you have to have a cost-benefit analysis anytime there's a new federal regulation or rule, and you have to consider the carbon costs. So what this is doing is literally, it's going to increase the price of gas. It's going to increase agriculture prices. It's going to essentially be a tax on our economy. And now, once again, this may be signaling to the woke crowd and everything else, but at the end of the day, it's the hardworking taxpayers that are going to have to pay for, you know, the Biden administration's using us as some sort of experiment. And that's what's happening. And so I am making sure that I am fully engaged in pushing back against the Biden administration. And we got a critical time right now. I always say all that political stuff will take care of itself. Before I ran for AG, I had never run for office. Nothing. Like the legislature, never ran for anything in high school and stuff. I'm not a political guy. I was a prosecutor. I was a gang prosecutor. I worked at a think tank advocating free market ideas and individual liberty. You know, I'm kind of a wonk. And so, you know, I try not to get too involved in the political stuff because I figure that stuff will take care of itself.
Well, I think you're proving that a wonk can just come right on in and take control and challenge the government and be, you know, it's kind of like the David and Goliath, right? It's kind of like the David and Goliath. That's what I see here. And I think that's so important. And I also believe that, you know, we looked at deregulation under President Trump, and that really incentivized businesses. Yeah. It invigorated businesses. It brings jobs back. And you can do that and still be friendly to your environment. You can do that and still be a good citizen. So I think challenging these over regulatory processes that the Biden administration is throwing at us left and right. And, you know, as they try to become the empire, we've got you, Attorney General, fighting back. Thank you so much for being a part of the Sarah Carter Show.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What an upside down world we live in. I mean, I'm so grateful that you all were able to hear the Attorney General, and I mean, somebody with common sense, right? Somebody with common sense. We don't see that enough lately. And I'm, you know, and again, those are the stories that I want to tell. Those are the stories that I want to share with you. And that's why I'm doing this. There is one more story, though, that is so bizarre that I want to share it with you, because Columbia University is offering graduation ceremonies based on race, ethnicity, and income status. No, I'm not even joking. What the heck is going on, folks? Next month, Columbia University will offer 6 additional graduation ceremonies based on race and ethnicity and self-identifying factors like Native graduation, Asian graduation, Latin, Black graduations. Those are options where you can register, as well as a Lavender graduation for the LGBTQ community. What? These online graduations and for first generation Americans and low income students. You know what? I am so sick and tired of this. I just want to call it out. This is like racist, weird, divisions. You know, we're supposed to be unifying our country. We're supposed to be accepting of others. We're not supposed to be like, oh, hi, I'm in the low income graduation. Hey, I'm going to join the Black graduation. Wait a minute. I got to join the half Cuban graduation because I'm half Cuban. Oh, can I join the Latino graduation? Is that okay? What about Columbia University graduation? What about that? You know? I don't even get this. What are we missing here, folks? What are we dealing with here? You know, there's also Texas Women's University, according to this article in USA Today, and Portland State University. They also have multicultural graduation events planned later this year. What are we like segregating each other now? We're openly like saying we have to segregate each other. Soon it'll be like only blonde people graduation and brown hair graduation. Like, and then we'll have like people who like dogs graduation versus people who like cats graduation. Anymore dog person, boxers versus tidy whities. What about it? I don't know. I got to tell you, I think one day we're not going to be around to see that, but like 100 years from now, they're going to be looking back. At least I hope so. I have hope in the future. I see the glasses half full, right? But those folks 100 years from now are going to be looking back at this time and saying, what the heck was wrong with those people? We were going through some weird transition in human history. Like, I don't know what's going on here, but I do feel like we're in some kind of weird crossroads of human history, and especially in the United States, maybe some kind of crossroads in the US. Anyways, I had to vent a little bit. I had to vent. And I know all of you out there are doing the same, so it makes me feel good. I know that half of you, maybe more than half of you, have common sense. This is America. I love this country. I'm willing to stand up for it. I'm willing to fight for her. I believe in her, and I believe in you. Thank you so much for being a part of the Sarah Carter Show. Please join me again. This week on this show, we have another special guest for you. It's a surprise, surprise. I don't want to let you, I don't want to give it away now, but we will later. We will let you know. And go to sarahacarter.com. Don't forget, go to sarahacarter.com for all the latest stories and all the latest links on my social media. And remember, when you're there, sign up for email. Sign up for our email. Because of censorship, we don't want to lose touch with you, okay? So sign up for our special email. We promise you we'll send it out twice a week. Keep you updated on all the latest stories. Again, thank you so much for being a part of the show. Remember, here at the Sarah Carter Show, we're taking the story back. Today, I'm joined by Rebecca Weber, the CEO of the Association for Mature American Citizens. It's also known as AMAC. Can you share a little bit with the audience about your father, Dan Weber, and how he founded AMAC and why?
My father formed AMAC after he recognized that the AARP really was not representing his values. And those values were really faith, family, and freedom. And my father believed in America's greatness. He believed that there was what he described as a cultural shift occurring in our country. He thought that the very, very foundation, the Constitution, was being disregarded. And we saw that the power of government was growing and individual freedoms were diminishing, were being threatened. And to get more specific, was in 2006 when he said to me that he was canceling his AARP membership. And I said to my father, why would you do that? And he said, well, they've just named Harry Belafonte Man of the Year. And he went on to say that Harry Belafonte had commented to Hugo Chavez saying that George W. Bush was the greatest terrorist threat in America. And my father said something is wrong with that. So he saw the AARP make this sharp left turn. And that was when he said, let's form AMAC. And I said, let's do it.
Rebecca, thanks so much for being with me today. I'm honored to have you and AMAC as a sponsor for the Sarah Carter Show. You know, for more information, folks, visit AMAC.us/Carter.
Florida shows us how to deal with traffic-blocking protesters. President Biden tells Israel he opposes any retaliation for Iran's weekend attack. And some House Republicans are ready to boot the speaker once again. I'm Greg Corumbus. Join Jim Garrity of National Review and me each weekday for the Three Martini Lunch podcast. We'll give you the good, bad, and crazy news of the day, and hopefully a lot of laughs, too. Join us. Follow the Three Martini Lunch on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Todd Herman, host of The Todd Herman Show. You might have heard me on Rush Limbaugh's show, where I was a regular fill-in for about 8 years. I now do a show out of the high mountains of free America because, you know, I got exiled from Seattle. Why the need to remake country music and into what? From there, I looked at art. Art under the guise of totalitarian regimes is so interesting because it seems that Beyonce is doing exactly what totalitarian regimes want done with art. Check out The Todd Herman Show every day on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.